The world and everything in it is made possible in part by listeners like us. I'm Anna Grace Scheidler, and I'm a mom and a musician in Nashville, Tennessee. I hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning. Google and Twitter have announced they'll be restricting political ads this election season, but Facebook seems to be resisting pressure to do the same.
We can either continue to stand for free expression, understanding its messiness, but believing that the long journey towards greater progress requires confronting ideas that challenge us.
Also today on Culture Friday, this day after Thanksgiving, we'll talk about our annual tendency after maybe overindulging in food that we go out and overspend, and a review of perhaps one of the best films of the year.
It's Friday, November 29th. This is The World and Everything in It from listener-supported World Radio. I'm Megan Basham.
And I'm Nick Eicher. Good morning.
Up next, Jill Nelson with today's news.
President Donald Trump made a surprise visit to U.S. troops in Afghanistan on Thursday.
There's nowhere I'd rather celebrate this Thanksgiving than right here with the toughest, strongest, best and bravest warriors on the face of the earth. You are indeed that.
The president used the trip to announce that peace talks have restarted with the Taliban. Those talks broke down in September when Trump called off a planned summit at Camp David. At the time, he said a draft peace proposal conceded too much to the Taliban. Meantime, violence in Iraq exploded as security forces shot and killed 27 protesters in a 24-hour period. The highest death toll came in the oil-rich provinces in the country's south, where protesters blocked roads. Protesters in Baghdad also blocked three bridges leading to the heavily fortified Green Zone. That's where government buildings are located. When they tried to cross the Ahrar Bridge, security forces opened fire. Anti-government rallies have raged across the country for several months. Protesters are demanding a new government. They are also angry about Iran's influence over their political leaders. On Wednesday, protesters set fire to the Iranian consulate in Najaf. It was one of the worst attacks against Iranian interests in the country since the protests started on October 1st. The province that includes Najaf is also home to the country's Shiite religious authority. Iraq's Ministry of Foreign Affairs condemned the violence and demanded a strong response from the Iraqi government. It said those encouraging violence wanted to harm relations between the two countries. North Korea fired two short-range projectiles from the northeastern part of the country on Thursday. That, according to South Korea's military. A U.S. military spokesman expressed regret over the launch and urged North Korea to immediately stop acts that escalate military tensions. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe called the launches a serious challenge to both Japan and the international community. The missiles appeared to come from a super large multiple rocket launcher, according to South Korea. The show of force could be related to the year-end deadline set by North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. He wants President Trump to offer a new proposal to restart stalled nuclear talks. The launch also came several days after North Korea conducted military drills on a small island near the border with South Korea. Explosions at a Texas chemical plant near Houston disrupted Thanksgiving plans for thousands of people. The first explosion on Wednesday morning injured three employees. That was followed by smaller ones. Then an afternoon blast launched a tower into the air. Fearing more explosions, Jefferson County Judge Jeff Brannick issued a mandatory evacuation Wednesday night.
Our top priority at the county and the cities is the public safety. And we'll do our best, our very best, to return you to your homes as quickly as we can in a safe manner.
About 50,000 people in a four-mile radius of the plant left their homes as government and Red Cross officials scrambled to open shelters. As of yesterday, fires at the plant continued to burn and the evacuation order remained in effect. Federal prosecutors have launched a criminal probe to explore whether pharmaceutical companies knowingly flooded communities with prescription opioids. That's according to a new Wall Street Journal report. The Journal reports the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of New York is conducting the investigation and may bring charges based on the Controlled Substances Act. The law is typically used to go after drug dealers, but it also has monitoring and reporting requirements for companies. News of the probe sparked a drop in stock prices for companies that produce and distribute painkillers. The pharmaceutical industry has consistently denied responsibility for the opioid crisis. Over the last two decades, some 400,000 people have died from legal and illegal opioids. Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade goers breathed a sigh of relief yesterday. New York City police cleared the parade's famous character balloons for flight. High wind forecasts earlier in the week had threatened to ground the massive balloons for only the second time in a century. Thursday morning, astronaut Snoopy, SpongeBob SquarePants, and Smokey Bear balloons all made their appearance, although high winds still kept some balloons low to the ground. I'm Jill Nelson. Straight ahead, social media and free speech. Plus, a movie about making great cars and even better men. This is The World and Everything in It.
It's Friday, November 29th, 2019. Glad to have you along for this post-Thanksgiving edition of The World and Everything in It. Good morning. I'm Megan Basham.
And I'm Nick Eicher. Social media and high-tech companies are increasingly becoming gatekeepers of free expression. Let's listen now to a brief clip from a speech by Facebook founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg. He's speaking here at Georgetown University last month.
And today, we are in another moment of social tension. We face real issues that are going to take a long time to work through. And in the face of these tensions, once again, a popular impulse is to pull back on free expression. We're at another crossroads. We can either continue to stand for free expression, understanding its messiness, but believing that the long journey towards greater progress requires confronting ideas that challenge us. Or we can decide that the cost is simply too great. And I'm here today because I believe that we must continue to stand for free expression.
Zuckerberg's comments came in response to pressure the social media giant is receiving over its decision to continue allowing political ads on its platform. He went on to say that his default position is that when it is not absolutely clear what to do, we should err on the side of greater expression. Twitter and Google, on the other hand, have decided to err on the side of speech restriction. Twitter announced several weeks ago it will not allow any political advertising, and Google followed suit last Wednesday, saying it will no longer allow campaigns to micro-target advertisements to voters based on their political affiliations. They also said that going forward, they will not permit any ads that make claims which are demonstrably false.
But of course, as we've seen from the past, from all these platforms, demonstrably false is in the eye of the beholder. Google has suppressed search results from pro-life groups, claiming they're simply favoring the most reliable sources. That is to say, abortion industry sources like NARAL and Planned Parenthood. And just this week, Twitter suspended a conservative journalist for a hate speech because he cited straightforward statistics about homicide rates among transgenders. John Stonestreet joins us now for Culture Friday. He's president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. John, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, John, let me add a bit of balance here to Zuckerberg's good words that seem sympathetic to free expression, because Facebook does not have exactly a great record as a free speech crusader when it comes to these issues. Pro-life and pro-family activists have complained that the platform has suppressed them in specific instances. So I guess this is the obvious question. Do we have any reason to believe that the tech giants will not deal with political ads in the same one-sided way that they've treated abortion and other social issues?
No. Next question. I mean, no.
I feel a little bit like the debate moderator who says, okay, 5 minutes to go here.
Yeah, and there's really, I mean, is there 5 minutes worth of stuff to say here? I mean, no, there's not. I mean, everybody is driven in the way they do their work and the way they think about the issues of the world from their worldview. And the worldview that is dominating many of those that we would call secular elites is diametrically opposed. And we're at a point now where we're not kind of presenting different facts. We're presenting different interpretations of facts. And basically, the side that has the power levers are often saying that their interpretations of the facts are the facts. So that's the confusion of worldview. Your worldview is like a pair of glasses. More fundamentally, it's like a pair of contact lenses. I wear contacts. I forget that they're there. And we forget that our worldview is there. You only have to watch how many in the media cover religion and miss it so dramatically and don't feel the reason to even try. I mean, you can kind of think, for example, of Time Magazine's Person of the Year last year, which is, you know, Harbingers of Truth. In other words, that we will take on this hard responsibility of fact-checking everyone else except for ourselves. And so it's a real blind spot, and that's the way worldview operates.
Well, you know, it's sort of funny talking about fact-checking everyone but themselves. John, I saw this headline. When I did a search, I saw that most of the headlines on Google News search are saying something along the lines of Republicans blast Google for stance on political advertising. Yet when I was researching the subject, both Republican and Democratic campaigns made it clear that they're not happy about this change. And the DNC asked Google to reconsider. I think we may have found the only topic that both sides agree on. Seriously, though, Republicans have likened it to voter suppression. Do you think that's a fair characterization?
Well, there's no question that this is the new monopoly on information and on ideas. So there's not another way right now to get the message out. And I think it is, in a sense, it's certainly information suppression. But I also think it's vulnerable, you know, because you have, I think, a real sense in which, and after 2016, these many across these kind of power centers admitted that they missed most of the population. They missed a large segment of the population. I had no idea that really they even existed. And I think you're seeing examples of that in 2020 or heading into 2020 as well, even on the Democratic side specifically. So, for example, Mayor Pete Buttigieg is rising in the poll numbers. I saw a headline, you know, another one that pretended to be neutral, but basically said Pete Buttigieg channels his inner Obama. And you're like, oh, wow, that's a loaded, you know, headline. But it was the same week at which Pete Buttigieg basically garnered, according to polls, zero support from black voters. Zero. And I think, for example, the Democratic platform, they oftentimes think that everyone agrees on everything, but you do not have an African-American segment that will be comfortable with a gay presidential candidate. It just won't happen. And I think, again, that's another example that they're not as up to speed on the American people as they think they are, and that's a real vulnerability.
And now, John, I'd like to turn to some news associated with the biggest spending day of the year. We call it Black Friday because it puts retailers in the black, but Americans are facing record levels of credit card debt, so maybe we should start calling it Red Friday. You know, surveys show that most of us are still planning big shopping splurges, and millennials are the most comfortable with debt, with more than half saying they're okay going deeper into debt if it means spreading some holiday cheer. I will confess that while I wouldn't want to take on new debt to buy gifts, I have been known to go a little bit overboard, especially for my kids. So do you have any suggestions for how we balance being responsible with our Christmas shopping without feeling like we're not, you know, free to enjoy what God has given us to celebrate this time of year?
Yeah, you know, have you ever seen that old clip of Bob Newhart? He's playing the role of the counselor, and somebody comes into his office and says, you know, hey, I'm struggling with this. What should I do? And he just says,
stop it.
So, yeah, I think with Black Friday, we have to stop it. But let me give you maybe an angle on this that I think drives this consumerism and new levels of debt, and maybe we don't often think about it. It's the proliferation of having to do all of our holiday celebrations on Facebook. I'm not against sharing it with friends and family. We're going to be away from some of our family this Christmas season, and it's going to be great to be able to use Facebook to look at memories. But you know, Pinterest, for example, plays a role that, you know, basically we end up comparing ourselves to others, and our holiday doesn't seem as happy as their holiday. And man, why won't my kids all wear matching Christmas pajamas and do a really clever lip sync that'll go viral? And, you know, why didn't I try this kind of cool, you know, way to do a do-it-yourself decoration? And it's the new form of keeping up with the Joneses, and it really distracts us from the sacredness of the preparation, the Advent preparation. So I think one way is to get off social media, and I think another step is to recapture this ancient gift of the church, which is a different calendar, the Advent calendar, using this time for the sort of fasting, for the sort of preparation and repentance that Advent requires. So, you know, there's not a silver bullet for all of this, but I think those are things, disciplines that we've embraced in our household that help. They don't make us perfect, but it does help.
John Stone Street is president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. It is Culture Friday. John, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Additional support comes from the liberal arts tradition, helping you discover what great education once was and can be again. LiberalArtsTradition.com.
Well, we have to say that sometimes social media is not a terrible thing, right, Megan?
Right.
You will enjoy this, I think. Bill Jaguar was hiking Mount Hancock in New Hampshire, a 10-mile snow-covered loop trail 4,000 feet up. He lost his gold band wedding ring changing gloves and didn't realize it until after the hike was over. It was lost in the snow, and Jaguar was distraught, as he told TV station WMUR.
Oh no, there's no time to rehike this today. I wasn't going to be able to get back up there in the next few days, so I'm thinking, I'm not sure if I'm going to get this ring back.
So he posted his plight on social media, and Brendan Cheever and his buddy Tom Gately really felt for the guy.
I instantly thought, there's no way, you know, it's a 10-mile loop trail.
Well, no way, but you never know. So the gang decided they'd go on a treasure hunt.
He found it. Found the ring.
Wow.
Good old American can-do spirit and a metal detector. Always helps. The ring safely returned. Oh, good news.
That's great.
It's the world and everything in it. It's Friday, November 29th. You are listening to World Radio, and we're so glad you are. Good morning. I'm Nick Eicher.
And I'm Megan Basham. Coming next on The World and Everything in It, I've got a review of a thrilling, feel-good movie that'll help you appreciate the men in your life. Though rated PG-13 for a smattering of language, it's currently my front-runner for the best film of 2019. On its surface, Ford versus Ferrari is about making American cars great again. But look underneath the hood and you'll see this ripped from history story is really about making men great again. Or better stated, cheering what masculinity is at its best.
Mr. Ford, Ferrari has a message for you, sir.
What did he say?
He said Ford makes ugly little cars in ugly factories. And he called you fat, sir. We're gonna bury Ferrari at Le Mans.
It's the early 1960s, and the Ford Motor Company, once the pride of American industry, has become bloated and mediocre. Oh, it's still churning out plenty of vehicles, but they're bland, inoffensive cars crafted to shuttle around families. Nothing necessarily wrong with that, but they're not the kind of machinery to inspire a sense of greatness. A brash young member of Ford's executive team by the name of Lee Iacocca offers a solution.
In the last 3 years, you and your marketing team have presided over the worst sales slump in U.S. history. Why exactly should Mr. Ford listen to you?
Because we've been thinking wrong. Ferrari. Now they've won 4 out of the last 5 Le Mans. We need to think like Ferrari.
Ferrari makes fewer cars in a year than we make in a day. We spend more on toilet paper than they do on their entire output. You want us to think like them.
Enzo Ferrari will go down in history as the greatest car manufacturer of all time. Why? Is it because he built the most cars? No. It's because of what his cars mean. Victory. Ferrari wins at Le Mans. People, they want some of that victory.
Iacocca knows greatness isn't achieved by committee, and that men who get the job done on the track may also be prone to throwing a few elbows. So he recruits racer-turned-car dealer Carroll Shelby, played by Matt Damon, and gives him carte blanche to craft a winning vehicle and team. Shelby, in turn, recruits the best driver he knows, cantankerous British transplant Ken Miles, played by Christian Bale. Though Miles is a Brit, there's something quintessentially American about both him and Texan Shelby. Damon and Bale deserve Oscar nominations for fleshing out their complexities without flattening their enormous personalities. They're blunt, competitive, and rough and tumble enough to resort to fisticuffs with bags of groceries on the front lawn. It's the movie's funniest scene. We want Shelby and Miles to win, not because we want to see Ferrari lose. It's because we want to see them rewarded for their daring, their steel, their willingness to risk life, limb, criticism, and coin to blaze new trails.
Give me one reason why I don't fire everyone starting with you.
Well, sir, we're lighter, we're faster. And that don't work, we're nastier.
In fact, in his own refined Italian way, Ferrari's drive for excellence is, in many ways, a mirror to theirs.
You can't just push the car hard the whole way, right?
That's right. You have to be kind to the car. You feel the poor thing groaning underneath you. If you're going to push a piece of machinery to the limit and expect it to hold together, you have to have some sense of where that limit is. Look out there. Out there is the perfect lap. No mistakes. Every gear change, every corner. Perfect. You see it?
I think so.
Most people can't. Most people don't even know it's out there, but it is. It's there.
Now, the real enemy is a Ford executive whose efforts to undermine Shelby's team, while taking credit for its work, exemplifies a particular kind of corporate culture. The faint-hearted kind that doesn't respect individual achievement. The yes-men who use buzzy corporate speak to mask the ways they stifle innovation and creativity. But don't imagine that means Ford versus Ferrari is hostile to capitalism or to business in general. In fact, though a lesser character, it's clear that Iacocca's vision is what makes Miles and Shelby's work possible. Iacocca's no race car driver with grease under his fingernails, but he's courageous in his approach to leadership, risking the wrath of those further up the food chain if it means delivering a better result. Sharp and masterful in the background, he shows that doing excellent work can also mean clearing the track to allow others to run their race unhampered. I suspect James Mangold, director of similarly rugged films as Logan and Walk the Line, didn't set out to make a rallying cry for masculinity. And maybe at a different time, in a moment where words like toxic aren't so often used to describe men, it wouldn't feel so much like one. And yet, unlike so many of the films marketed as feminist, nothing about Ford versus Ferrari hits you like a take your medicine, support the message kind of movie. It's an exhilarating, roaring romp. And you don't think once about what its glimpse of the past says about our present culture until long after it's already said it. Once it has, it leaves you grateful for a God that made us male and female. That we get to live in a world where we can sigh over a Jane Austen romance one week and thrill to the antics of wild boys like Carol Shelby and Ken Miles the next. And it makes you sad to think we might be losing it. Today is Friday, November 29th. Good morning. This is The World and Everything in It from listener-supported World Radio. I'm Megan Basham.
And I'm Nick Eicher. This weekend marks the beginning of the season of Advent, the 4 weeks before Christmas set aside for faithful reflection and preparation. Last year, we ended each of our Friday programs with an Advent music recording from college choirs and choral groups around the country.
This year, the tradition continues, but with a slight twist. Here's World Radio's Myrna Brown.
Father in heaven, thank you for this day. Thank you for what it means that we get to be together.
Josh Bells is a 38-year-old Anglican priest who grew up Southern Baptist.
I was kind of brought up to think of the word ritual as a negative thing. I never heard the word Advent. I never knew what liturgical seasons meant. I was going to say that's probably one of the reasons why the seasons of the church year, like Advent or Easter or Lent, or why they mean so much to me is I'm coming at it from a fresh place, I think.
Lift up your head. In 2018, Bells recorded his rendition of the German Advent hymn, Lift Up Your Heads, Ye Mighty Gates. The hymn was written by George Weisel and first appeared in the 17th century. In 1855, Catherine Winkworth translated it into English. It's a reflection of Psalm 24:7. Bell says while the hymn personifies Israel's anticipation of the Messiah, there's also a 21st century application.
We're also preparing ourselves for an event that has yet to take place, the second coming of Jesus, and all of that gets wrapped up in Advent. So it's isn't it crazy to sing with Israel from a psalm, lift up your heads, ye mighty gates, but now it has an utterly new layer of meaning on top of it.
Surrounded by Gothic Revival architecture, Bells recorded himself at his church, the Cathedral Church of St. Luke in Orlando, Florida. On this project, Bells sings and plays piano, guitar, and banjo.
I basically keep a root bass note kind of the same all the way through the song, and it gives it the sense of like tension and waiting and hope, and I think that speaks to me of the meaning of the song too.
Lift up your head, ye mighty gates, behold the King of glory waits, the King of kings is drawing near, the Savior. The portals of your heart.
Advent prepares us for Christmas the way Lent prepares us for Easter. And I find that if you don't have that season of preparation, that the pausing and the waiting and the hoping, then when Christmas Day finally gets here, there's it's simply not as special.
Reporting for World Radio, I'm Myrna Brown.
It truly takes a team to get this program together each week, and so our thanks to our hardworking team members. Mindy Bells, Myrna Brown, Paul Butler, Janie B. Cheney, Kent Covington, Kristen Flavin, Anna Johansson, Lee Jones, Jill Nelson, Onise Ohikeri, Michael Renault, Jenny Ruff, Sarah Schweinsberg, Les Sillers, and Cal Thomas.
Johnny Franklin and Carl Peet stay up late to get the program to you early. J.C. Derrick is managing editor, and Marvin Olasky is editor-in-chief. And whatever you do, in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. Go now in grace and peace.